Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. It is July 29th, I think.
Yep.
2021, and this is Radio Free Nintendo. This would be, oh boy, oh, this is going to be rough. Episode 733, I think?
Yeah, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Cool. My brain's in a fog. I've been sick for a while, like a while. So I might be a little stupid today. So just bear with me. Give me some slack. I'm joined today by Mr. Greg Lay.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
Mr. Guillaume Vaillette.
Good evening.
And Mr. John Lindemann.
Hello, James.
Hi, John. I'm worried there was a setup coming there, so I'm like, hello. What can I do for you? We're here to talk about video games, and I'm going to start off with some of the new business here, because I mean, it is new business, because we've been waiting. It's new to us. It's new to us business, which is the Great Ace Attorney Collection has been released as of Tuesday. And as I noted, I have been sick, and I have had time to play this. And I sure have. Greg, you also have been playing it a bit.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been sort of waiting for this for quite a while, so I always thought it'd be a good fit as my first outright Ace Attorney game. I've played Phoenix Wright versus Layton before, but that's about as close to a proper Phoenix Wright game as I ever did get around to play. But yeah, so I snapped this up straight away. But yeah, I mean, it's probably going to be as it was, if anybody remembers, years ago. It might be 2017 or something. I forget exactly when it was I played Wright versus Layton, but yeah, that was a very gradual kind of thing, kind of read before bed kind of experience. So with this, I've played a little bit, seen, you know, the presentation and sort of, you know, played just sort of through, like, essentially the first part of the first case, which you're thrust into, you know, pretty much straight away. But yeah, I'm sure you'll have finished both games before I get that much further.
I'm nearing the halfway point of the first game at this point. Except I've had a lot of time. So I'm in case 3, which is like the first real proper formatted Ace Attorney case. You know, the first two cases are really just introducing your cast.
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially the first part of the first case is just, you know, a very introductory just to the basics of the trial format and, you know, cross-examination, presenting evidence, just which, you know, are things that, you know, even for me, I've covered essentially in Phoenix Wright versus Professor Layton. So, you know, it still, you know, does a good job of couching it in the broader kind of exposition and tone setting of, you know, the time period and you know, all the kind of cultural kind of context that this is happening in and all that. So I've still enjoyed it so far, but it's gentle stuff, to say the least.
Yeah, the second case is really doing the same for the investigation style stuff. Here's how you investigate a room. Here's how you interact with interview people. Here's how you present things to them to try to get more intel. Here's how you should think about what you show to a person. Here's how you should examine pieces of evidence you've collected, that kind of stuff. There is no trial segment in the second case. It's all investigation. And that's where we meet our Sholmes character, which, Jesus Christ. So yeah, if you've not been following this game, which is fair, this is a Shu Takumi written Ace Attorney game, which it's been a while since we got one of those. In fact, it was Layton versus Wright. This game only came out in Japan on 3DS and I think mobile. And then they did a sequel, which we also didn't get, obviously. And then we finally got them just now on PS4 and Switch Tuesday in the West, which seemed unthinkable until Capcom had all their files hacked. Although I caught it secondhand, even though I didn't read that stuff, because look, those weren't leaks. They were stolen, and there's a morality component of that. And I'm not going to go dig through your stolen trash. But we got it. Hey, it's a miracle. And of course, one of the sticking points was the Sherlock Holmes character, because the trademark, the Conan Doyle family still has copyright on some components of that character.
Yeah, that's the really weird part about it, isn't it? It's like, well, after a certain point where he's less of a robot, it's not fair. It's not public domain anymore. It seems a bit granular, really, doesn't it? But I guess you just don't want to get anywhere near that, anywhere near being in any kind of legal jeopardy. So, yeah.
Well, they're very litigious, so it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
well,
it would seem difficult to defend, you know, like, let's really put this to the test. Is he emotional in this story or not? In a cut, right. Like, that seems tough to me to actually kind of nail down in a court, but I'm assuming it probably has happened or something.
Yeah, a lot of times what they go after are elements of his backstory being referenced that weren't introduced until later books, or like certain tics that the character has that are pretty core to how the character is remembered, that were introduced later. Now, they're not the ones who invented the Herlock Sholmes, which is Capcom's solution here. It's not Sherlock Holmes, he's Herlock Sholmes. That goes to Maurice LeBlanc, who is the writer of the Arsène Lupin books. Because he originally proposed to Conan Doyle,
the most epic crossover.
Yeah, exactly. The transmedia event of the generation.
Mm-hmm.
And, Doyle was having none of this shit. And so, LeBlanc's response was to simply call him Hermlock Sholmes. So Capcom is reusing a known literary joke here. Because LeBlanc knew what he was doing. He was making a joke, and they've decided to follow it up, which is a nice little callback to literally the exact same problem 100 years later. Like, when I say this happened, the issue that I'm talking about, roughly contemporaneous with the plot of the game in which it's happening, like 1905. This game, I think, is taking place around the 1890s. Because we're talking post-Meiji Restoration, which would be the 60s, and a few decades on. So yeah, we're talking like the 1890s. I was curious how much they were going to try to handle introducing the climate the game is set in. Because it seems to be, and so far in the story, it seems to be that is where they're headed. Like they're Kazuma, who is our hero's friend, seems to be tied strongly towards trying to build legal institutions in the country, or in the Empire of Japan, which does not have a history of proper legal representation. You know, it's your standard more like legal courts, where it's just some noble makes a decision, and that's a decision, and execute it out in the yard. Towards a more justice-oriented system. I can say firsthand that they spend much of the game talking about like how the greatly evolved regal British legal system, and then the first time you see it, people are like hurling fireballs around in the courtroom to decide guilty or innocent. And I'm like, yo, you might want to pick a different country to model your shit on, because these people have catapults with fireballs. That's not great. What's happening here? I really am enjoying myself. I think the team that wrote the second 3DS Ace Attorney game, which his name is escaping me at present. This was the investigations team, and then they did Dual Destinies and whatever the other one was on 3DS. Excuse me. So they've done four of these games. I felt like they had kind of hit their stride on the last 3DS game, and they had done some really fun stuff. I think they did a nice job with the second Ace Attorney Investigations that we never officially got. But Takumi's work hits hard. Like, he is a really good writer, and even through the localization, it comes through. the characters this game has are insane, and there's so many of them. And it's that's so important in this game. Like, the Sholm's character is a lot. Like, he's almost insufferable. He's walking right to the edge of being insufferable. And he's just, like, leaning over it and taunting you that he's going to step over the line at any second. But he doesn't. And then he goes and he disappears and he fucks off. And then you're like, where'd he go? Okay, well, I guess they're giving me a break from whatever his dumb bullshit is. Cool. And then he comes back and he toes right up to the line. And then he steps back from it and he goes away. And it's never like, it's always played like they know that they're bringing you right to the edge of, I want to punch him. And that's really difficult to, like, bring him to the edge where you're still having fun with the character. But you know, if they had just pushed that one joke one more time, you would have lost, you know, it had snapped and you'd have been out. There's a delicateness in, like, pushing that character in a real, like, I'll give a really good example. One of the tutorials in the investigation phase is teaching you that you can pan the rooms. So you're investigating a room. It's not just what's directly in front of you. You can pan to the left or pan to the right to see more of the room. It's just, they're limited by the real estate you have to work with. And in that, to progress the game, you could do everything that the room wants you to do, and it won't progress unless you've panned the screen for no particular reason. And you see on the wall, there's Sherlock, who is hanging from some candelabras mounted to the wall, in his words, to see how strong they are. And so he's just standing there hanging from them. And if you don't interact with him, you'll never advance the plot. He doesn't do anything relevant to the plot. The game just wants to make sure you panned the camera over there and saw this dumb asshole hanging from the candles.
So he is kind of chewing the scenery.
Oh, no, he is. He has, like, he's fully digesting the scenery. Mm-hmm. The sequences in which he gives his deductive reasoning, which are usually riddled with really, like, complete nonsensical flaws. Like, how did you reach that conclusion, you absolute mad person? Are called literal dance, what was it? The dance of, not dance of logic. But he literally dances around the scene.
Is it deduction? It sounds.
Dance of deduction.
I would bet on something alliterative. So
it is dance of deduction. He literally, like, he'll dance around the scene, snap, and a spotlight will appear, and everyone will react to it. That's highlighting what he wants to draw attention to. Then you'll see him, like, pirouette around to the other side of the character, who's freaking out as he does this, and he snaps again, and the spotlight changes, and. He's not just chewing the scenery. Like, he's really getting in there. He's got no utensils. He's face first into a whole turkey. Like, it's so much. Except it's right on the edge. And every character that Takumi writes manages to walk right to the edge of what you're like, I want them to stop being this. And I kind of dig them anyway. Like, this is a jury trial. And if you played Layton versus Wright, the jury trial was in there too. It's different in this game, but similar concept. Well, that's six more characters that Takumi got to write in every case. And so the case I'm in right now, one of them's an old woman who's just knitting and who will occasionally make notes of the fact she's going to let the trial run a little bit longer so she can knit some more. One of them's a knife pervert. Who's just sitting there with his knife and, like, fixating on it and spinning it around and, like, swinging it around at people. One of them is this guy who really just wants to go home. So he's just pretty much just like, whatever, just go with this verdict. And you spend a bunch of time interacting with these characters to try to keep them from putting your person behind bars. You have a prosecutor who seems a little bit on the nose. You know, he's there, I don't know what it is about Takumi and German prosecutors that are dressed like weird anime characters, but we sure have another one of those. You have a judge who's not wildly incompetent, which is interesting. Of course, you have your assistant whose name is escaping me right now. I can't remember what her name is.
Wilson is our Watson.
yes,
stand-in. I've got far enough for to know that. So, but yeah, this is Wilson's daughter. Yes.
Right. Well, I haven't met. I have, but that's late. We don't meet her for a while.
Oh, okay.
No, the Susato.
Ryo Nosuke's assistant.
Yeah, I have grown to like this character. She's not just a Maya replacement, which is what my fear was, that she was just going to be a Maya replacement. She's got a nice personality to her. Ryunosuke is a right replacement, though. He just is. He's a stand-in. He's a right stand-in. It's fine. He is his ancestor, so it's a little bit okay. As you've seen, you do have a run-in with the judges whose names are about how much they hurt. I mean, prosecutors, the Payne family. His name has some other kind of pun. So apparently this has been some battle between these two clans for generations. God, it's just nice to have a new Ace Attorney game. And I have two of them. And I'm worried I'm just chewing through this game. So, like, I played the entire first case in one sitting. One standing. Because I had finally gotten out of bed after... I mean, I was really sick. I had finally gotten out of bed on my own power and wanted to just stand and move around a little bit. And I walked to my kitchen, which took forever. And I played the game sort of leaning against the counter. And I think I was at that counter for like 3 hours. Because that first case is long. And I beat the whole case right as the Switch was about to die.
I mean, you were so sick that you actually opted out of making a terrible TSI for the website for the podcast.
I did. Yeah, that's the degree of sick we're talking about.
That's how you know you're really under the weather. So...
I felt bad about it, too. Okay, like, I felt bad that I didn't make
one. You know what? The image didn't occur to me. Sorry if that offends you. But I did notice that John wrote the article. So I thought,
yeah, I had to text John to ask him.
I didn't realize it was that bad. Perhaps I should have done.
Yeah. And the thing is, I couldn't. There's no way that I was going to try to replicate what James does, because I don't even want to see like that dark alchemy. I don't even want any part of that.
The thing is, the first time I read it, it didn't hit me, but then there's the conduit reference.
Yeah.
On the forums, if you view the article through the forums on NWR, you see it's clear that it's John specifically that's credited with me posting it, and it all came into clarity. But I still wouldn't have guessed that the reason was as severe as apparently it was.
I had 101 degree fever, or 100.8, and I read the article and didn't remember I couldn't remember the sentence I was reading as I read it. It's like I would read a sentence and not remember I literally edited it for John one sentence at a time, completely independent of context. So like I forgot the conduit reference was in there until somebody made a joke about it and I got mad. I'm like, no.
A definite conduit for your enjoyment. Oh, so good.
I was so mad. This is unbelievable value in terms of gameplay. There is a neat thing that was part of Layton versus Wright, where they would release these kind of like downloadable things every week, but it was Layton styles. They was already on the damn cartridge. It was just a thing. And they would be like little bonus chapters or information about the character design. So it would literally be like, here's a bunch of concept art for the character and notes from the designer about, you know, what was the deal with this design? Why was it built this way? If it wasn't picked, what was the issue? In this game, they did that for all the characters, because, of course, unlike Layton versus Wright, where the primary cast already existed, they had nothing here. All of the music. So there's a music player, and in the music player, there's lots of like, what are some other Like Susato's theme is in there, but there's two alternate Susato themes that weren't used. And the composer of the alternate themes is talking about why it wasn't used. And one of them, there's two composers on this game. And in one case, it was like alternate theme one. And the composer goes, I thought I really nailed this one or something like that. He goes, ultimately, we didn't use it. I heard the other one's theme and he got it far more right than I did. So in the end, it was okay. But they just go through these songs. And one of them's like, first time I showed this to Takumi, the thought was it was kind of boring. It's like, oh, wow. It's just like a long, like, discussion about why these things are what they are. And they have the little bonus chapters, which I can only do the first two right now because of spoilers. I mean, I could go watch them all if I wanted, but spoilers. I think there's like 10. There's all kinds of weird art you can look at. The game, even though they're 3DS games, and you can tell they're 3DS games when you look at them, they look nice. They look nice on the Switch's screen in handheld mode. Everything about this feels good. I have a new Ace Attorney game for the first time in, what, 6 years? No, it can't be that long. Right? Dual Destinies was the first one. That was 2013. And then,
is it Spirit of Justice, the sixth one?
Yeah, Spirit of Justice came out in 2016, so 5 years. Yeah, almost like 5 years in September. So it's been a long time since we've got an Ace Attorney game. And I got one now. And that's cool. And I'm happy about that. And this game feels good. And I'm glad we got them. Capcom sent out a survey that talked about how you felt about the game, which is a really insane thing to do the day after it comes out. When it's like 30 plus hours long. I don't know what possessed them to take this course of action, but they sure did. And unlike a Sega survey that'll ask you, have you ever heard of Sega on question 50? They're just like, hey, would you buy a sequel to this game? And I'm like, yes. And they're like, why? And I'm like, yes. Like, yes. You put Ace Attorney on the tin, I'm going to buy it. As I say this, under this tabletop is a shelf, and on that shelf is all the Ace Attorney manga just sitting there. And the Edgeworth ones aren't very good. I still kept buying them. So, like, look, I'm glad Capcom finally brought these games over. They deserved it.
Do you have the Wii Harvey Birdman game? Or
I do. I haven't played it, but I do have it.
It's all right.
Yeah, that was my thought. I bought it late. I actually like Harvey Birdman a lot, so I was surprised I didn't buy it at the time. But yeah, Greg, is there anything you wanted to add?
No, like I said, it's so early. I do think it was scaled up pretty nicely presentationally, but fundamentally, yeah, you could see that it'd be pretty similar to Felix Wright versus Professor Layton. But you know, like I said, I don't think that's going to be any kind of an issue, especially it's almost all going to be played handheld and all that. I mean, I get it's just like a tiny little thing. It's like, I'm quite happy to have the noise for the text scroll. Like, but yeah. I just wish I could mix it down a little bit. I'm surprised. Like, it just seems to be the options are like on or off for the different components of sound.
I had the exact same thought because the music is really good and the Switch speakers are really not. Which is something I've become more and more aware of, knowing
you need that sweet, sweet OLED model, don't you?
Yeah.
Right, now you're trying to convince yourself that it's worth the money, huh?
No, here's the thing. I don't care if it's worth the money. I have the money.
Sure. you're trying to convince yourself that you're still being, you know, reasonable or whatever.
Discerning.
Yes.
I have been doing a Nintendo podcast for 13 years, Guillaume. There's no precept of me being reasonable. Like, I'm fully aware of where I'm at in my life.
I mean, it's for any kind of ridiculous Nintendo purchase. Look, I mean, to me, it's like I'm the same way. It's like I do a Nintendo podcast. I just have that built-in excuse. I'm buying this mainly because of the podcast. Okay. All right. I don't need it.
I'm not even pretending. I'm not even pretending there. I'm just saying, like, I'm buying it because I can.
Mm-hmm.
Like it really is just like,
so,
yeah.
You know, so some people, you know, they maybe buy like a Maybach, put some rims on it. You buy a Switch OLED is what you're saying.
I buy a Maybach and I put some anime girls on it.
All right.
And I drive it around Forza.
Ballin'. I get it.
I've done that. I've specifically done that to you in a Maybach.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fun. Yeah. All right. Well, we should move on. We'll definitely have more to say about this game in the future. Guillaume.
Yep.
What are you up to?
Yeah. Well, you told me to punt it to next week, but there's really not that much to say about the DLC for Streets of Rage 4. So I'll just go ahead, you know, and say that there's two things. First, there's a free update that everyone gets that adds a new difficulty mode to the story. And you also get a new training mode where, you know, it shows you the inputs that you're supposed to enter. And it shows you like some combos and some maybe more advanced techniques. And so that's pretty cool. And they've also kind of like tweaked the gameplay here and there. I'm still kind of figuring out what changed. But overall, like that's positive, new stuff for free. There's also the DLC that was supposed to come out like a week, 2 weeks ago, and that there was some bug with the Switch version. And anyway, so that's been fixed. So the DLC is $8 US. I think there's a discount right now. I don't know for how long. But basically, you don't get new story levels. What you get is you get to play as three of the bosses: Estelle, the cop, Max, the wrestler, who was also in Streets of Rage 2, I think, and what's the third one? Some third boss. It completely escapes me. Anyway, so you get to play as them, and Shiva, right? The kind of the karate guy. And so you get to play as them. They've got an expanded set of moves from compared to when they were bosses. So, you know, like they seem to already have a pretty good repertoire, but it's been expanded to be more fun, I suppose, to play as them. And you also get kind of an endless mode where you are going through arena after arena of enemies, and it's like random enemies, random power-ups. You get new types of weapons in that mode. You get new types of enemies that we haven't seen before in Streets of Rage 4. A lot of them taken from previous, you know, Streets of Rage 1 through 3. And they also, like, every time that you finish one arena and move on to the next, like, you also pick up a perk. So it could be something as useless as get a second jump to something as useful as, your charged punch now creates lightning that travels from enemy to enemy. So that changes things a lot. There's also kind of a, you know, like, it's a randomized, but there's also a weekly, like, set of levels that you can challenge others, like for the, you know, the leaderboards and stuff like that. And it changes weekly. So anyway, it keeps things fresh. So it's been fun. Karen and I played with that a little bit, and it's like, okay, endless Streets of Rage 4, exactly what we needed. So we'll be playing that more in the future. But what I've been really playing more of is Need for Speed Hot Pursuit Remastered. So I've played this, I downloaded it first. Well, first I downloaded Need for Speed from 2015 for the Xbox One because it was on the Game Pass. And it was like this kind of reboot of the Need for Speed franchise. And it was like, it had FMV that you couldn't skip at the beginning. And it had like these Fast and Furious rejects.
That was the trademark of the Need for Speed series, was the FMV.
I don't remember the ones that I've played before didn't have that.
The first few Need for Speeds all had FMV in it. The original Need for Speed, called The Need for Speed,
released on
3DO, Saturn, and PlayStation, was infamous for its weird FMV.
Okay. But I didn't... I played two. I played Porsche Unleashed, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. I skipped a whole bunch of them, but none of them had a lot of FMV. But like, this is very much like first, the camera is your point of view, and like, you've got the little kind of smart alecky asshole, and you've got the cool dudes, and you go to parties, and there's women, and there's racing, and like, it's very much like, anyway, it was insufferable. So I tried to play that, and I really hated it, and it was like this open world, and not everything needs to be open world, and certainly not racing games, in my opinion. So I ditched it. Then I moved on to Need for Speed Hot Pursuit, and this is a remake of the original Hot Pursuit, which was earlier in the 2000s. But this one came out in 2010, and then, you know, the Xbox One version was remastered, right? And so I started playing that, and it's just like, select a freaking race in a menu and go do that race, do that event. You can't really get lost. It's mostly, you know what the road is, you know where you're going. And it's just this one event, and then you're done, and then you're booted to a menu, and you can do immediately another event, and hallelujah. That's the way that racing games should be, in my opinion. I say this after saying that I've enjoyed Forza Horizon 4, but that game is just it's just better than Need for Speed in general. So yeah,
that game is really good.
Yeah, and also the universe, like the world that they created, they created the Scotland. But it's just like a fun place.
They created Scotland.
Yeah, basically. But like Edinburgh and like around there, like the version that they have in their game is really fun to race around in. So I don't know. I feel it's different. I've talked about Burnout Paradise City earlier last year or this year. Time has no meaning. And I said that I didn't really like the design of the city and how like a lot of the, you had to go to where an event starts to be able to do it. And like, it was very much like east loaded. All the events started on the east of the map and often ended west of the map. And then if you wanted to start the next event, you ran very quickly of events that started west. And so you had to trek back east just to do a race. So that was done. So this game, Need for Speed Hot Pursuit, just menus, you unlock new cars, you select them, you don't customize anything, like there's no headache, you know, you just select a race and you go, and that's fantastic. Now, this was developed by Criterion, the developers of Burnout Paradise City and the Burnout franchise, and it kind of shows, because it's kind of a Burnout game in disguise. It's called Need for Speed. It's got branded cars, but they can be damaged. They can be crashed. There are, you know, Hot Pursuit, like you do races, but you also do the whole thing where like the cops chasing the racers, and like you sometimes you have to evade the cops. Sometimes you're playing as the cops and you're trying to crash the cars. And so that's, you know, that's Burnout, basically. It's very similar. So I started playing it on the Xbox One, and I found it, you know, kind of... There was a period of adjustment for the controls for me, because I felt like I was always oversteering and overcorrecting. And I think I realized that I don't love the Xbox controller for its control sticks. It's really hard to make subtle movements. So I don't know. Like I'm not in love with that controller. Like I've in this game and in other games, I don't know. It's not great. Now, the funny thing is, like, I had reserved Need for Speed Hot Pursuit for the Switch, ages ago from the library, and it came out around the same time as I was playing in an Xbox. I didn't cancel my order. I was like, well, for once, I'm not just going to look at the reviews for Hot Pursuit for Switch and say, like, well, it seems like it's good enough according to others. I'm actually going to play it. And I started playing it in handheld mode, and I've got my brand new Hori Split Pad Pro to play it with. And so I started playing it, and like it was super easy, right? Because I was already used to the game, and I already have like a familiarity with the early races, right? But eventually, like I made it further into the game, and I realized that I was also better because of two things. First, the Hori sticks are amazing. I really love them. They offer like a lot of travel and also a lot of resistance. And that makes it that it's really easy to make the more subtle movements and not just like go like completely fully tilt to the left and the right and overcorrect and oversteer all the time.
Yeah, see, I feel they're a bit soft. They're a bit soft for my tastes. But that's probably because I play so much on the Xbox. So,
no, maybe. I but anyway, I feel like they're kind of perfect for this game. I really like them. So that's one thing. The other thing is that the Xbox version of this game runs at 60 FPS, and you know it's HD, and it looks great. Well, it looks pretty good. I mean, it doesn't look like Forza Horizon 4, but like it looks pretty good for what it is for a remastered version of a 2010 game. But at the same time, like maybe it's trying to do too much and like too many details, too many like, and so like it's easy to not see what's coming ahead. Around the bend, you know, like it's easy to kind of have to rely on the mini map because you can't really quite see actually what's ahead of you. And the Switch version, as far as I can tell, same AI, same, like it's locked 30 FPS. It's not 60, but it's like, it's very stable. So it's, I don't miss the 60 FPS that much. And also, I think that they just like to, in order to have that stable frame rate, they remove some objects on the side of the road. You know, a little bit less shrubbery, maybe like a little bit less detail, and that just makes the game easier to see, which is actually a good thing, in my opinion. I like being able to see what's coming ahead, to be able to, you know, take a curve correctly. Like I like to be able to see the traffic that's coming up so that I can avoid it. I'm just weird that way. But yeah, so I find that the Switch maybe has the more playable version of this game somehow, because it has to do a little bit less. And so it's not as busy visually. So I don't know. I really like that. I would recommend, like, if you were playing it, to play it on handheld mode. Like I was playing it on the Switch screen, and I was like, wow, like they really did a good job. It looks really good. It's really stable. That's awesome. I did put it in the Switch dock at one point, and I reality caught up with me, and I was like, oh yeah, they had to make sacrifices. Oh yeah, like the Switch doesn't have quite the resolution, and this looks a little bit sad compared to the Xbox version. But if you're playing it handheld, like this is what you want. This is a really playable Need for Speed on the Switch, you know, portable. So I really recommend it, and I think that it might be the Switch version might be the version that I stick with in the future. That I'm going to complete. So, yeah, highly recommend it.
Cool. John.
Yeah, so what released very recently is Flight Simulator on Xbox Game Pass. So I
This is the Flight Simulator 10 console version, right?
Actually, I think it's the 11th game, I think.
11,
yeah,
okay.
I think it's the 11th game.
The one that came out on PC last year.
Yes. Yep.
Did they skip a number because it would be because of the Y2K bug or whatever it was?
No. Okay. I think that was just Windows. Okay. Thank you. I just couldn't remember the number.
Yeah. So and really just playing around with it more out of curiosity than anything. I mean, I think this is, I would classify this as kind of like the perfect Xbox Game Pass game, just because it's not something that I would put money down to buy. But it's something.
Oh yeah,
it's something that's really fun to play around with. I certainly don't want to, go hardcore into learning how to fly, and I'm not going to buy.
But you could, John.
I could also.
You could be me. This could be your Forza Horizons, John.
It could be. You know, I could.
You could. We could jump cut to 2 years, and you could be a licensed pilot cruising the skies.
I could be, but maybe not. Maybe that's a long term goal. We'll see. But yeah, I mean, I you know, downloaded it and started playing around with it. And of course, first thing I do is I, you know, do a flyover of my hometown up in Canada. It's really impressive. I mean, it's pretty cool just to fly around in, because it's very realistic. What they're doing is, while you're flying around, they stream the map in, and it's very seamless. They do warn you when you boot the game that, you know, that if you have any sort of data cap on your internet, you'll probably want to watch that, just because it's constantly streaming. So I'm curious actually how much it streams. I really don't know, but so it takes what I'm assuming is, you know, Bing Maps, and, you know, extrapolates the data there for, you know, stuff it sees on the ground, and makes a 3D rendering of it, which is quite accurate, very, very accurate, kind of accurate to an almost creepy degree. And so, you've heard stories about people, you know, flying over their house and identifying their house, and you can do that. The one thing I will say is that, it gets a little bit like they go a little bit crazy with the trees. It's like the trees are like a bit too bushy on the ground.
A bit too tree-y.
They're like a bit too, you know, like to the point where they sometimes obscure houses and roads and stuff like that. So you kind of have to, you know, they just go a bit crazy. You can tell that they have like only a couple of models for the trees. And if you see this on the map, you'll display this kind of big tree and this kind of small tree. But, you know, all the trees kind of look the same. But nonetheless, it is really, really cool. So you start off on a map, and there's a couple different modes. You know, you have the full-blown flight simulator mode. You have a discovery mode where they'll give you – you can fly around a certain place like the Great Pyramids, or, you know, probably Grand Canyon, stuff like that. There's that mode, and then there's also a mode where you can just pick, like, flying between points, and you have free flight as well. And so there's all kinds of airports. I mean, airports that you wouldn't really think of, smaller airports, like regional airports, are on there too. So, you can fly really, like, you don't have to fly from, you know, Los Angeles to, you know, Phoenix or something like that. You can fly from some small little airport to another small little airport, because it'll be there on the map. And you select that as sort of your flight path, your kind of flight log, like you set that up and then, you know, you take off, and you can let the AI run it for you if you want.
Wait, so you can simulate playing flight
absolutely.
Simulator.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking yeah, yes. Let's do
this. It's
great.
But that's the cool thing about it though, to me, because it's just kind of a tourist mode. So you can, because it is kind of annoying. Like really, I mean, really I'm just there to sort of take it in, almost like, you know, just like, it's like kind of like if you go to Hawaii and you have one of those helicopter trips around Hawaii, right? Like you right. don't really care about flying the helicopter. You just want to see, you
I,
just want to,
I want to fly the helicopter.
Yeah. You just want to take in the sights. Well, you might, crazy bastard, but you know, you just want to
let me fly the helicopter. Yeah,
no, I'm going to fly the helicopter.
Captain James Jones is here to fly this fucking helicopter.
Captain Jones is hijacking this helicopter. That's but right. You know, I'm just there to sort of take in the sights. And of course you can fly real low, but the coolest thing about it is, because it's actually, I think, taking it from real-time map data. And I don't think it's not completely up to date. There was a couple things I know, like a couple of things that are being built in my hometown that aren't there. And I think that's because probably it's a year old, like the actual map image that they're using.
Yeah, I mean, it's like looking at Google Maps and stuff.
Exactly. And so there's some stuff that's not there. But the coolest thing is, it's a little bit difficult finding, you know, where kind of situating yourself from the ground or from the air rather, like seeing what's on the ground and figuring out where you are. Like I had to bring up a map on my laptop to make sure I was looking at things the right way and I was where I thought I was. But what's cool is that, because they're actually taking it from the real images, if you go to the mall and there's a Target there at the mall, I mean, you fly down there and you can see there's Target on the side of the mall building. Like the way I found in my house was, up in Canada, there's a grocery chain called No Frills. And so I'm flying over where I think kind of where like my house is or was. And I'm looking around and I flew down a little bit lower. And then I'm like, oh my God, there's the No Frills. And then it all fell into place. I'm like, oh my God, there's the Pharma Plus over there. The pharmacy chain. And I was able to situate myself immediately. And it was a weird, it was like when you see yourself on television and it's almost a weird sort of,
out of body experience.
Yeah. Kind of almost affirms that you exist. Exactly. It's a very, very strange feeling. You're like, it's almost
other people are seeing me and I am seeing me. I am real.
Yeah. It's like, you see, it's like, I'm playing this game and I live right there and that place really exists. And that's what's really cool about it is like you're flying over a real place. It's not just, you know, like something like maybe Grand Theft Auto or we're talking about Forza Horizon where it's an interpretation of a real place
right. That's
trying to look realistic. It's like
my spot in history is preserved by this experience.
Somewhat. Yeah. It's almost, yeah. it's proof of existence almost in a strange way. And so you can fly all around, and of course, you know, the AI prevents you from stalling out and stuff like that. I did hit the ground and I got stuck at one point on the ground and I couldn't, because you can, like I was playing it, like it's like a little like single engine Cessna or something like that. And, it only goes forward, right? There's no, I don't think actual real planes, like there's no way you can actually back up in a real plane, I don't think. Because that option wasn't here. I mean, you can in Grand Theft Auto, but Grand Theft Auto is not trying to be real. So, because you can't do it, at least in the plane that I was flying.
You wouldn't be able to with the jet, I don't think. You might be able to with the propeller plane.
Yeah.
But even then, I would think they would just push you.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, but if you go onto the ground and you run into a house, there's no way to back out of that. You're stuck.
My plane.
You're stuck in someone's front yard.
My plane has claimed your house.
Yep. It's like, don't mind me. It's just my propeller's in your living room. Don't mind me. I'm just passing through.
This is my new hangar.
Yeah. So, but no, I mean, it's really impressive. So, you know, I'm gonna play around and fly over some more places. But the coolest place is like, you know, if you've been somewhere, you can say, hey, that's the hotel that I stayed in, or like that's my friend's place.
Yeah.
And it's and the way that they model the buildings and things on the ground, you can tell what they are from above. You know, if you fly over some, you know, like a hockey arena or something like that, I mean, you can see, you know, like the Air Canada Center or whatever. I mean, it's on there and it's the correct shape and everything. So it's really cool.
Does this game have multiplayer?
I don't know. That's a very good question.
I feel like that would be really fun / frustrating.
Yeah. I think you can have...
Because what if you... multiple planes?
I think it does. I think you can have other people flying around. I think you can opt into having other people fly... Like, whether or not there's other air traffic around, like other people flying.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if it has proper multiplayer, but you can opt in, I think, to have other people... appearing around you.
I'm going to categorize this, and you can correct me if you think otherwise, as a high risk to James game of like, he's been playing Flight Simulator for 142 hours.
Potentially. Well, the thing is with this game is that it's really relaxing.
Yes.
Because you're sitting there, but it's relaxing and yet also intriguing and interesting. Because
yeah, it's that Forza thing of like I go it's meditative, not necessarily like mm-hmm. chill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you kind of have to keep you sort of have to keep an eye on your instruments and stuff, and you know just make sure you're not doing anything crazy. And one of the things you learn is that when you're in a plane,
never,
you know, it's not like playing arcade. You know, because you know, like mostly every single flying game I've ever played has been extremely arcadey. But when you're actually doing something like this, which is approaching, even when you're doing just a free flight mode, is approaching. You know, simulation, you realize that in a plane, you can't turn very quickly. Like you have to bank very gradually. Or else, you know, things kind of go haywire pretty quickly. So
I'm going to turn this 747 full of passengers.
Right. And so it forces you to sort of slow down and just kind of, you know, slow your pace down and just kind of take in the sights. And, you know, it's interesting coming into an airport because you can, because like they have, like the airports, when you fly by them, they will communicate with you. They'll say, hey, like, you know, you are flight number, blah, blah, blah. We see your heading and whatever. And they'll guide you in. And what it does is if you go near an airport, I don't know if it does this with every airport, but it's probably just the one that you've chosen as, your, of where you're going to, it sets you up sort of the kind of, the cone when you're on approach. And so you just fly through like these red rectangles. So it lines you up with whatever runway you're flying, you're descending down onto. But it's interesting because airports have more than one runway. So you just think, oh, there's an airport, I'm just going to land there. But in reality, that's not how it works. And you don't really think about that unless you're actually trying to somewhat fly realistically. So, because I was flying by an airport and I was saying, okay, why can't I just land there? And they're clearly like the game is actually directing me in a totally different direction. But then it clicked and I realized that, oh, they were setting me up for approach. So they wanted me to go northeast, and then bank back to go west and then come into a different runway. So
I've been meaning to try this, and it came out in this on the same day as Ace Attorney, I believe. Mm-hmm. And another game we're going to talk about in a moment. I kind of want to go try this.
It's really, it is really impressive.
I'm watching this video of Montreal being explored, and it's like, it's nuts. Like, I can pretty much see where I live, just, you know, orient myself based on the Olympic Stadium, and like, there's the Olympic Stadium, and there's my old apartment, and like, I don't know, like, here's where I work. It's uncanny. Like, everything is there. There's like the Six Flags. I can see the McGill campus. It's weird.
Yeah. It's really unlike anything I've ever played.
How much of a monster can I be if I want to be?
I don't
like, will the game stop me?
I'm sure you can turn off everything. but I mean, like, you know, it's like you can fly anywhere, right? I mean, there's
like, if I got in an instance with you, could I just try to chase you down?
I don't know. I don't know if you can get into an instance with another person. I'm not too sure.
Okay. Well, we need to figure that out, because I'm definitely going to fly responsibly in and around your plane.
Yeah. But
I'm definitely going to fly responsibly in your plane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure.
Oh.
But yeah, it's really impressive. Now, I don't know if this is just a Series X thing, but the frame rate does chug a little bit, I think, as it's streaming. So, like, it's not bad, but you can see it. So it's not 100% smooth all the time, but for what it's doing, it's fine, you know? And the game's also very slow paced as well, so it doesn't matter.
This game had like really insane hardware specs on PC.
Yeah, like it really, that's the thing though. I mean, it's really doing something. So yeah, it's cool. So, you know, I'm going to fly around a bunch of cities, and, you know, I'm going to do the discovery mode where, you know, you go to all the tourist attractions and stuff. And I mean, that's the thing, that the real time, or almost near real time as you can get, just that realistic representation, like, of the world as it is right now, including, and they can even pull in the live both the time and the weather in your area right now, like real time weather. And so if you choose, you can fly like at night, right? You can, it'll check your local time, and it'll be twilight, or it'll be the middle of the night, or the middle of the day, and it will also give you the weather, whatever weather is going on in your area. So
wait till your area has like a hurricane,
mm-hmm.
and then try to play the game there.
There would be at the very least, maybe not like a full-fledged hurricane, but there would be a huge storm there, because you can't. I haven't flown in a storm, but you can set that.
Oh
yeah,
like that. That feels like an extra layer of fun of like, oh, the weather sucks outside, I should start this game up.
Yeah.
and see what happens. Oh, it's gone terribly wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
That's cool. Shit. It's very cool. Definitely yeah. give it a try. I would say anybody can give it a try. It's the kind of game that can really appeal to anybody just because it's more, it's almost like an educational sort of tourist kind of thing. More so, with a very realistic simulator tacked onto it.
Well, it's on Game Pass. So yeah. like just if you have Game Pass, like there's no reason not to.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's the Sea of Thieves thing where like it's just there. Just try it.
Yeah.
Go try it for yourself.
Yep. And it's a, and I mean, you can play it, you know, you can just sit there and, you know, play it for a half an hour and just leave it. It's, you know, it doesn't matter.
Oh, man.
It's cool. You should definitely check it
cool.
out.
Cool. So Tuesday was a great day for games. Mm-hmm. It just was. And in fact, Greg, you've got another game that came out. Did it come out on Tuesday as well?
No, I think it was, technically it was today, but, I bought it through the Japanese eShop. It gave me a few extra hours to spend some time with it. Blaster Master 03, as we did mention a little bit, yeah, about this sort of release crunch with Neo, World Ends With You, and yeah, Ace Attorney, everything else. But yeah, I've been looking forward to this. I've put a few hours in so far, which, yeah, obviously they're not the longest game, so I'm probably somewhere, you know, in the middle or so, but not seen enough to kind of give an overall opinion, but you kind of get the sense of some of the main difference. I mean, there's a fair bit of continuity with 02, as you might expect, but the original Blaster Master 0, that's not a very fun phrase to say. That was, you know, still quite heavily patterned on Blaster Master itself from, you know, the NES Famicom game. You know, it was obviously quite a lot different. You know, graphically, it was, you know, a fair bit better looking. Gameplay wise, it was kind of, you know, cleaned up some of the kind of weirdness, you know, the overhead bits kind of, were less punishing, more enjoyable, but structurally in a number of other ways, it was still, you know, pretty closely kind of, you know, sort of very embellished kind of remake of the original Blaster Master. And then 02 kind of gets, so, well, we will take the kind of fundamentals that we had there and break them out into something that's more its own, that's more varied kind of structure. You had this sort of ability to like go to different planets and stuff. That I enjoyed that quite a lot. It was good to kind of take what was a very enjoyable game kind of fundamentally and take it out of that original Blaster Master box and go some other places and introduce some new mechanics and kind of embellish it and stuff. And I thought I was very successful. So this one is got a bit more of a challenge because it's kind of, you know, you haven't got that original template and you haven't got just the thing of, oh, well, it's not the original template. Like, you've done that. So, and they've sort of said this is kind of wrapping it up. And it does, it seems like, obviously, I mean, it wasn't all that long ago that I played 02, but I've not touched it since my initial kind of run. And so, I don't know, it does seem like it's fairly kind of, you know, not literally pick up where it left off, obviously, because that would be silly to like just dump you into something as difficult as the very end of the previous game. It's not Super Mario Brothers 2 for Japan or anything, or even that is probably not quite that merciless. But, you know, it does kind of feel like it's you know, assuming you've played the second one probably, and, you know, you're going to you don't, in terms of abilities, you don't pick up exactly where you left off either. There's, you know, kind of plot reasons why your tank isn't as capable anymore. You know, so some things are carried over, some things are not, and then you're going to get some of them back. It's a pretty familiar refrain. This often happens to, you know, Samus in Metroid games, or the Grim Reaper turns up and nicks all your stuff in Symphony of the Night. It's a well-worn sort of trope at this point. But with this, really, the kind of core differences that this has introduced so far, big one is you've got a kind of light world, dark world thing going on, with both in the side-scrolling and top-down sections. And indeed, the boss fights themselves will actually essentially have boss fights that are both that take place across the two sort of viewpoints, you know, a top-down boss and a side-scrolling boss kind of as one encounter and are kind of straddled by this dark light world, dark world thing, which was kind of interesting because I remember, especially with the first one, I think virtually all the boss fights were in the top-down thing, which was fine, but, you know, they were reasonably good, but it did feel like he was kind of missing out on more fun boss fights in the side-scrolling setting, which I think they kind of addressed that in the second one. And so far, you know, the side-scrolling boss fights that I've seen in this third one are pretty good as well. But the light world, dark world thing is sort of exploration, of course. I guess it's kind of it is something that's been employed in the past to kind of, I guess you would say, kind of intensify or in some way complicate exploration. It's kind of like, oh, well, you've mastered, you know, this from some previous game, but now it's more convoluted. You know, Metroid Prime 2 did this. Obviously Link to the Past, you know, which is kind of at least what I think of as you're the kind of originator of it. I don't know that it was, but I'm sure it popularized it to the extent that it's ever been popularized. So yeah, as much as I love Link to the Past, it kind of is a concept I like, but it does make things more convoluted. It makes navigation and exploration a bit more fiddly. So I wonder if it will actually increase the appeal of this game. Although, like I said, it doesn't necessarily seem like it's going to, it's aiming to broaden out the appeal terribly much. So it is just kind of, give another game for people who enjoyed the preceded two. And in the main, I think it seems like it's on course to be pretty successful in that regard. The one thing worth mentioning is that in the top-down sections that I've played so far, it is, and I think this may well have changed in the second one as well, but, you know, in the original Blaster Master construct, you kind of like, you built up how sort of capable your weapon was, and it kind of went through different kind of things that it could do. But then if you took damage, those things got taken away. And in this case, it's like, well, no, it doesn't quite work like that because your gun can have like five different modes regardless of being damaged. But if you take damage, they just get less powerful. So, you know, a particular beam just won't go as far anymore, or it won't have as much of a spread anymore if it's a different kind of weapon or whatever. And so while that's sort of preferable, in terms of it's not as debilitating, it's not as kind of frustrating, there is still a feeling sometimes where it's like, if you take a certain amount of damage, and your guns are weakened to a certain degree, it's like, I think I may as well just let myself die here and respawn back to a point where I hadn't screwed up and my weapons were reasonably powerful, because things are, you know, take a decent beating with reasonably powerful level of weapons. Once you get down into the sort of bottom tier, they really take a beating and it becomes a bit of a slog. But the thing is, there are enough checkpoints and save points and things that that's never really a big problem. If there's, yeah, you know, if you die, it hasn't cost you a great deal of progress, and you know, you could kind of come back and do better, and it's fine. So still, it still kind of works well enough, but yeah, I think that may frustrate some, that kind of dynamic of, you know, it's never the best thing, is it, when it's like, well, if you struggle a bit, it then makes it more difficult to succeed. There's no Mario Kart, you know, like, here's a mushroom to help you thing, your top speed is going down, which I guess is part of Mario Kart a little bit, because you lose coins in America, your top speed decreases.
Right.
But that is very much mitigated by the fact that it's like, oh, I've got an invincibility star and a golden mushroom waiting or something. You know, with this, like I said, once you get trapped in a cycle, it can just feel like it's easier to go back and do it better, basically. And if you're careful, and once you learn kind of, you know, especially I think there's certain parts of the top-down action where it's just better not to engage with enemies. And then other times where it's like, no, you do need to engage with them in order to progress. And it's just, what's the best approach? And once you kind of figure that out, most of them aren't to this point anyway, all that difficult. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it. And I imagine I should be at least finished with the kind of core playthrough, by next week, and we can revisit it then.
Cool. All right. Well, that is going to do it for New Business Week. I'm back. We're going to go through some, We'll call it some lighthearted email. So stay tuned. RFN@NintendoRollReport.com. That's the email address where you can send your emails directed to RFN@NintendoRollReport.com. RFN@NintendoRollReport.com. I'm going to say it a bunch of fucking times. Just deal with it. Retroactive. As a reminder, we are doing a retroactive based around the fine year of 2009. The very first year we did a retroactive for Retroactive 50. I got the year right, right? I didn't just fuck this up in a really embarrassing way.
It's please, the correct
someone.
Year. It's the correct
okay,
year.
Good.
It's fine.
Okay. So you can send us games from 2009. These are games that came out in 2009. They could have come out on another system and subsequently have been released on a Nintendo system in 2009.
And there's some, I think there's some suggestions I've seen already that would be inflexible with like where they came out originally,
yeah.
You know, kind of thing like this. There's definitely, which is fine. Like we could,
right.
I think, someone mentioned Sin and Punishment 2, which was 2009 in Japan. Another thing like that would be like Endless Ocean 2, I think was 2009 in Europe, but 2010 elsewhere, weirdly. Like, yeah, so, yeah, and then especially when you expand it to other systems.
Endless Ocean is a wild choice.
It was a weird point in time that way. It was like, yeah, a kind of ocean exploration, kind of somewhat Pokemon Snap thing is being sold under the Touch Generations brand that, like, you know, Brain Age is being sold under.
Also, there's like a weird Layton style plot too, for some reason.
Yeah, I didn't play, I played the first one. I've kind of thought I might get the second one. I never did.
It was truly strange.
It was a strange time because it was kind of, you see the tail end of the like early Wii DS, like Touch Generations, like kind of stuff. But you've also got the segue into more traditional fare where it's like, oh, the biggest game that year for Nintendo is New Super Mario Brothers Wii. And, you know, they were the sort of side scroller renaissance is, ongoing. And so it's a
Wii Sports Resort.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's kind of a carryover of the Wii launch, but it's also a window into Skyward Sword a couple of years later. Because it is pretty much in the middle, latter middle, but, you know, of the Wii generation. There's all sorts of intersections and of different trends that were happening in that generation.
My first E3, and that was a very weird Nintendo lineup. Like, there was a lot of stuff to cover. Recommendations for games that we could cover that meet that criteria, go to RFN@NintendoRollReport.com as well. If you are going to be a little flexible with your dating, at least explain it, because if I just pull it up and it says 2010, I'm going to go like, nope. So if you're doing that, let us know that you're doing it, just so there's some degree of checks there. Because otherwise, I'm just going to see 2010 and go delete. So, we will probably announce this next week. Not 100% sure. So again, that's RFN@NintendoRollReport.com. You can also send questions for the mailbag segment, which is where you are currently residing once I conclude this plug, to RFN@NintendoRollReport.com. I've already lost track of how many times I've said RFN@NintendoRollReport.com. It's an insufficient number. But these people have sent their emails to RFN@NintendoRollReport.com, like Lemonade, who writes, "Dear RFN, @NintendoRollReport.com. It has just been announced that Dr. Mario World is ending on the 31st of October. Which Mario character do you think missed out on becoming a doctor? Or which doctor in Dr. Mario World is your favorite? Love, the Snow." Gentlemen, we are gathered here to announce the end of the medical fraudery that is chiropractors talking about pandemics. I mean, Dr. Mario World. truly, this is a great day. And by that, I mean, this game had a bunch of stupid doctors, and I wrote an essay about it. And it made me upset that we got Dr. Koopa Tower and Dr. Dolphin, which is literally a platform you stand on. The dolphin in Super Mario World is just a platform.
Yeah. Well, he's also food in the Japanese version.
Yeah, Yoshi pretty much devours everything.
Okay, fair enough. They put a lap guard on him and called it a thing. I guess briefly, Dr. Mario World Nintendo, I don't think, actually announces numbers for their games, but Sensor Tower has a metrics that they use to try to evaluate how effective games are in terms of revenue generation. And Dr. Mario World was not effective at all, which syncs up with the fact that they are shutting it down. If you go back to the episode where we talked about playing it, it's not really Dr. Mario, which would have been fine. It's like a drag and drop puzzle game that uses Dr. Mario World or Dr. Mario assets and some basic gameplay ideas, but it's not, you know, pill fall down jar, align pill, continue. So the question is, what the game became somewhat infamous because they had a Twitter account for it, and it would announce these doctors that just don't make any sense, and they were like the worst of Mario character creation. You know, like we'll make fun of like, oh, it's Pink Gold Peach in Mario Kart, but like this game was light year. Like this is the 4D chess of Pink Gold Peach. You had things like Dr. Baby.
Pink Gold Peach is not a doctor to the question.
She's not.
No, so neither is Metal Mario, which I guess that's how, for anybody who wonders how we got to Pink Gold Peach, I assume that's it, right?
Like, right.
You did have this weird little line of Metal Mario being a separate character in a few, I think he was like the ultimate character in N64 Mario Golf. Like he was the most, he had the best drive distance, and you know you unlocked him last, and presumably a few others, and then it was, I guess, at some point it's like, well, we're gonna have Metal Mario and Mario Kart, but we need a counterpart for him.
Right.
Would make more sense if it was like a doubles partner thing in a tennis game, because you know that's basically how we got Waluigi, isn't it? So. It's just it's like, well, if we had Metal Mario in a tennis game, we need him to have a doubles partner. That's how you would have got to Pink Gold Peach. But that's not how it happened. It was just in Mario Kart. It's so odd. I don't,
yeah.
Why does he need a counterpart?
Like, well, because otherwise he'll be lonely.
It's just Mario with a time limited pack. It's going to wear off. He could be fine.
My heart may be metal, but my emotions still beat inside, Greg.
I mean, a bunch of the Dr. Mario World doctors...
Don't WD-40 my heart.
A bunch of the Dr. Mario World doctors are, like, the fire versions of those characters, but at least...
Dr. Fire Baby Mario
or
shit like
that. At least that is a persistent power-up until you get hit, you know, whereas, like, the metal cap, that just wears off. That's the, you
but,
know,
like, Dr. Baby Daisy, I think, was my breaking point. That was the point where I realized this was a non-serious game that we were dealing
again,
with.
That is a sin committed by the Mario Kart games first, right?
Did they have Baby Daisy?
I think they did. I mean, obviously, the babies were introduced in Double Dash, which was another game which had the whole, oh, everybody needs a counterpart thing.
Right.
Because of the titular mechanic, you know, two characters switching and all that kind of stuff. So it was like, well, you know, you couldn't just have Baby Mario. You had to have Baby Luigi as well. And that, I think this is where Toadette comes from, isn't it? Like the Toad was
deemed. Toadette comes from Mario Kart Double Dash.
Yeah. The Toad was, you've deemed that he needed a sort of counterpart.
But
on that,
other Mario games would just say, oh, Toad needs a counterpart. Here's another Toad.
Different color Toad. Yeah. Which would good
or
enough
for
new
Super Mario
Bros. Or the
same color Toad, depending on what game you're playing.
Yeah. Good enough for new Super Mario Bros. Wii.
So Baby Daisy originates out of Mario Kart Wii.
She's also at Super Mario Sluggers. Yeah.
Other characters to premiere in Super Mario Sluggers include Baby Donkey Kong.
Yeah, it was in Yoshi's Island DS, where Baby Wario, I think, originates from that, who is also a doctor in Dr. Mario World, which is, I mean, that is a deep and truly awful cut.
Well, and he's holding the big
The magnet. They are actually not just the idea of like, oh, Wario was once an infant, but specifically referencing his sort of role in Yoshi's Island DS, which was that he could attract coins to you rather than you having to actually go and collect them individually. Like I said, a really deep cut. Not a game that Nintendo acknowledges a great deal these days. Quite a few of those outsourced platformers of that era, they don't acknowledge a lot. Like, if you notice on the Wii U shop, the virtual console, Super Princess Peach, you can't get it. It's not there. Which, New Super Mario Brothers is there. I think Yoshi's Island DS is there. But a lot of them, I don't know how much of it is they're not proud of them or what it is, but in this case, they went this deep. But this is why my answer, I think, is genuinely surprising. It's like you're going to go to places that you don't acknowledge. But they didn't have someone who's been sort of on the upswing lately in terms of getting referenced. And that's Pauline from Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
She has been in Mario Tennis lately, obviously Odyssey, but even before that, like the Mario versus DK games kind of brought her back and stuff, but it just seems like, yeah, that's a sensible kind of character, a sort of vaguely, humanoid, seemingly competent character to go with like Dr. Rosalina and all that. Like, why not her as opposed to Goombas standing on top of each other? Or, Baby Wario, or any of these sort of the fire versions of the same character. I mean, it's so baffling.
My immediate thought when I was working on this was, so they also have all these assistants, and some of them made the doctor jump, some of them didn't. And so if you, you want to get into some wild shit, you could play as Dr. Dolphin with Assistant Sushi, which is a shark. Or Assistant Yellow Shy Guy. Or the fucking penguins from Mario 64. Yeah, that's who I want in surgery with me, these fucking penguins. So originally I was thinking, well, why is Professor Egad not one? But that's not particularly interesting. I want Dr. Moai, which is actually Moe-Eye. These are the Moai statues from Mario Odyssey.
You could capture them and sort of waddle around and put some sunglasses on. Is that what you could do?
Yeah, what does the dolphin do to provide medical? What does Dr. Goomba Tower, three Goombas in a trench coat, do to provide medical care? At least the Moai knows, they could look inside you probably with their sunglasses and go, ah, that's not right. They've got power. I mean, they can do stuff. And honestly, they're probably one of my favorite characters out of Odyssey. So I just, their design is so good. It's so good. I'm quite happy with the idea of being able to experience them a second time.
See, if I were to pick someone from Super Mario Odyssey, I would go with a T-Rex, but I don't know.
Also a choice. What did you go with?
Well, it's kind of like similar. They never go back to the Game Boy games, right? So Tatanga, I feel like, is due for a comeback. Like, he was referenced, he was the last boss of Super Mario Land, had a regular boss role in Super Mario Land 2, and then he kind of fucked off, right? Like, there might have been a few references here and there, but.
He turned his life around.
Okay. Went back to his home planet.
I guess Wart is a little bit similar in that, he was from Super Mario Brothers 2 and he had a cameo in Link's Awakening, as did a lot of Mario things in that game. He's not really, they've not made many sort of references to him since.
Hi, I'm Dr. Wart.
That works for me.
I'm here to throw pills at you for the next
20 minutes. It can't be more interested in Dry Bowser, wouldn't it? Even though Dry Bowser is a pretty regular thing, like you see him in quite a lot of stuff. So that's far from the deepest cut here, but still.
Yeah. John?
I'd say Dr. Cataquack from Super Mario Sunshine. Just because the game
yeah. Where's the sunshine review? It's Dr. Pianta. Where's
yeah?
There's no Pianta smart enough to get him out of degree.
Where's the Dr. Judge Pianta that read as the guilty verdict of Mario?
Despite the fact that Mario looks nothing like the witness suspect. Yeah.
Yeah. The sketch.
Oh, you look nothing like him. Guilty. You were on a plane when the crime happened. Guilty.
Yeah, so
I'm just saying, kill all Piantas. That's it. That's my
agreement. Well, someone did, apparently. Otherwise, I think they would have been able to get whatever the factory is churning out these diplomas. They probably would have been able to get their hands on one.
They have a nice island, and it's full of stupid people.
I guess the closest you come to Sunshine representation is the dolphin, because their island is Isle Delfino. It's dolphin shaped. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just the thought of a cataquack sitting there in a doctor's outfit. And he doesn't even have hands. It has no hands.
Neither did the Goomba, so whatever.
That's true.
Practice these people are operating, it doesn't particularly exactly. require hands, apparently.
John gets credit for declaring when I was in the middle of an incredulous rant about Dr. Goomba Tower. Declaring that it's fine, each one of those doctors specializes in the level that they're currently looking at. It's like the bottom Goomba was a podiatrist.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, this is the worst. I hate this game.
What about Dr. Flood? You know, it's every time it's the same gag, open wide, and then he just fills your mouth with water. That's it. Nothing else happens. He's got no range.
In terms of like, Just random enemies. They could literally have just thrown any random enemy they want in there and called it a day. Because I mean, in the assistants, that's basically what they do. Like, you can get Bony Beetle as an assistant. Like, who even remembers what Bony Beetle is? Bruiser. I legitimately have no idea what Bruiser is. I had to open it up and look at the.
Is that a new Super Mario Brothers thing that sees that kind of runs around with boxing gloves?
Exactly. It's like a ghost with boxing gloves. It's a lot.
One of the weirder things in New Super Mario Brothers, I can't say.
So we could have had Dr. Bruiser, because it's Bruiser, because it's like a ghost too. I don't know. It's ridiculous. In terms of the doctors in there that I liked, I mean, There is Goomba Tower. There is something very stupid about that, but it goes a little too far, I think. I think Dr. 8-Bit Mario is close because he is two dimensional. But the thing is, they fucked it up, and he's not 8-Bit. He doesn't look anything at all 8-Bit. 8-Bit doesn't have that level of fidelity. So I guess I'm going to go with Dr. Beatty.
Isn't that from the title screen or something of Dr. Mario?
Maybe. I don't know. It doesn't look right. It something about it looks off.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the original Dr. Mario well enough to say.
It's that verisimilitude question. Like, it feels wrong. So I'm going to have to go with Dr. Baby Wario then, because it just looks demented. Like, I mean, the image that they chose for it is just absolutely demented. What about y'all? Dr. Navit's a good candidate, too.
Dr. Dry Bowser. I mean, come on. Bowser. I mean, really, Dry Bowser?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just a very different path from Darth Vader to being dropped in the magma. So I'm going to completely rethink my life and become a man of medicine.
There's more there's more for me out there.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I don't have to hurt people anymore. I mean, for a start, I should stop living in a castle set around molten lava when apparently it does this to me. Like, whereas Darth Vader, as we know from Rogue One, decided to build a castle on a magma planet after what mm-hmm. happened to him, which is it's a bit sick, really, isn't it?
It's exposure therapy. It's fine.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like Dr. Dry Bowser from that point of view.
Anybody else got one they want to drop?
No, I'm good.
Okay, fair enough. Guillaume hated all the doctors.
Cooper Kids is always nice. I mean, it's been a long time, but they did get blanked for a good while.
They did.
Actually, the aforementioned Super Princess Peach, I think, was one of the first things to kind of break the ice. Maybe that and Mario and Luigi, the first one, had some references to, you know, mid-2000s is when they first started to kind of creep back in, and then it was really kind of, maybe the Mario Kart 8 the first time round, like, where it's like, they're all in, and then, like, you know, Bowser Jr. as well for Smash 3DS Wii U. Having them as the alternates and stuff, that they say, okay, they've been, you know, kind of accepted back into the fold, I guess.
I guess I'm a little bit bitter that Spike had been in the club, you know, for a bit now. Like, he was allowed to play tennis and all that stuff, and now, like, he's just an assistant, really. Didn't make him a doctor. Like, the freaking Goomba Tower made it in, but not Spike. Like,
Dr. Blooper is a bit of a reach, isn't it, to be fair?
Yeah, the lack of respect.
I mean, he's got 8 arms to work with, though.
So that's the reason why I've never played this game.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Not because it's a bad game.
No.
Okay, fair enough. All right, we can move on from that. Guillaume.
Yep. Patrick writes, listening since episode 1, older than John. Here's the email. Everyone was so desperate for a Switch Pro because many of us believe that Nintendo finally, quote-unquote, solved it. They came out with their most traditional console in generations, whose party trick, handheld or TV, justified its lower power specs without limiting it to certain genres or demographics. Our fear? That they'll refuse to do the predictable thing and come out with a higher powered version of the same thing, if we were super lucky. There's a lot of phrases with this. Yeah, parentheticals, but anyway. Our fear that they refuse to do the predictable thing and come out with a higher powered version of the same thing with, if we're lucky, slightly more robust controllers. Instead, God help us, Nintendo will go back to the novelty bucket for the next console. If they Japanese geniuses insist on this, what are your predictions with what wacky direction they'll drag gaming next? Here are 3 possibilities for you to get started. 1. The Nintendo HP. It's 3 inches square. It projects holograms. It comes with a bag of dust and tiny bellows because you're only able to see the holograms in a heavily particulate atmosphere. As a bonus, it deeply annoys Hewlett-Packard. 2. The Nintendo Rheostat. Tired of having to choose between the binary of small portable screen versus full-size TV, this new console gives player a choice with the first infinitely adjustable screen in terms of size. Just twist the knob and the screen will shrink or grow as desired. Unfortunately, the cost of this cutting-edge tech leads Nintendo to keep power processor down to approximately 2 Switches taped together minus 2 Wii U's taped together. So the screen resolution will be semi-SD. 3. The Nintendo AO. Finally shedding their for kids image, Nintendo releases a console that only plays adults-only games. Looking forward to games like Mario Orgy and a sequel to Skyward Sword. You're welcome.
Hey, Mario Fox, right? We've established that already.
No.
He's 35 years old and... not a version.
RFN and NintendoRollDeport.com. Don't do this to us. All right. So Nintendo has made a choice. They have said the Switch. I would disagree that the Switch was a traditional console. I would say this was an incredibly risky adventure. But putting that aside, Mr. Nintendo has woken up and decided that from his 100-year slumber. And has stormed into the office and says, "We will not create a Switch 2. We need a new idea." The Mr. Nintendo now, who is not a real person, but he's sentient now, is taking.
You're thinking
pitches.
Of Mr. EAD, but sure.
No, I'm not. Mr. EAD never sleeps because he is a robot. Is now taking pitches. What is your pitch for this revolutionary new idea?
God, I don't feel like I can rivalize with Rivalize? Well, I can't. Anyway, I don't think I can Rival. Compete with, you know, like fake leakers and stuff. There's so the Nintendo On and like the virtual reality helmets and the...
Yeah,
I don't know. This hologram thing kind of gets close. Like that's the kind of insanity that I expect people to come up with soon.
So I have some good news and some bad news.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is if you've gotten your vaccine, you already have the next Nintendo console. It was injected directly into your arm along with the Microsoft's next console. So it's the Nintendo injection. And what it does is it's a parasite that filters into your brain. And it just attaches to the prefrontal cortex as well as to the sensory organs of your brain. And what it does is it installs itself and it lets you get the sensation of playing games anywhere. No matter what, you just be sitting there because it's tapped into your brain. So you don't actually have to press any buttons or any bullshit like that. It's all already in your head. So it hijacks all of your sensory organs so you get the most authentic experience seeing and feeling and tasting but not smelling it. That part doesn't work. People died. Don't ask. Your games. Right there on the bus, at school, in the home. And it's not like, oh, it's on a small screen or it's on the large screen. It's in all of your ocular capability. You perceive the game as itself, not on a screen or anything like that. This game burrows into your brain, but here's the problem. It only comes with one game. And that game is just a port of the DS version of Yoshi's New Island.
That was a 3DS game, New Island.
Yoshi's
Island DS.
Yoshi's Island DS. That's the one that has the really annoying...
One point was known as Yoshi's Island 2, but they thought better of it.
That's the one with the very annoying song, right?
New Island has got the really annoying song of it.
That's the one I'm looking for,
the kazoos.
That's the one I'm looking for.
Yeah, now, see, what you've reminded me of, and it's appropriately terrible, is Batman Forever. So in Batman Forever, the Riddler has like some sort of technology to just like beam television into people's brains instead of, you know, actually watching it on screen. So it sounds like that. But I guess so in this construct, Mr. Nintendo is the Riddler and all the people who, let's say they're playing the games or all that, they will be transferring their intelligence to Mr. Nintendo. I would say let's not have it be Yoshi's Island DS or New Island for that matter, but let's have it be a version of Brain Training for the irony value in that it is aggressive. Instead of just being sort of relatively harmless flim-flam that does you no good, it's actually actively making you dumber to make this Mr. Nintendo incarnate a super genius.
That's a fine strategy. I was just going
Not enough of a super genius to actually make his dilemma machine at the end where Batman has to choose between his sidekick and his lover actually work so that he does have to choose. Like, yeah, he's not quite that clever despite having sucked the brains of all of Gotham into his own.
What a masterpiece of a movie that is. I actually was going for the pure economic component of, hey, you've installed this thing and now you can play a game, but the only game it has, and it, because you're not hearing it, you're perceiving it in your audio cortexes, is the most annoying song in any Nintendo game ever made. And if you want another game, well, they're $150 a piece and we'll inject them into you. But you're going to have to pay up first.
It's also sort of reminiscent of the plot of Halloween 3. Which if it, is also infamous for having a really annoying song that's brainwashing children. I would say look it up, but don't, because it might get stuck in your head and that would be bad.
All these references, my mind went to Existenz, actually. We'll get a port installed into our spinal cords and why not let this little fleshy monster just like plug into us and upload video games or whatever it is.
I mean, it's not my favorite Cronenberg film, but good God, that's a big step up from Batman Forever. I would.
Oh, it is. Yes, yes.
Step down is what you meant to say, correct?
Depending on your point of view, as in whether your feet are actually on the floor or not. In there.
I try not to if I can avoid it. Floor is lava. So yeah, but basically it's a parasite they've already injected into your arm that forces you to hear the horrible music. And right now you're probably hearing it. And if you want it to stop, give us $120. Simple. Simple, endless business.
Oh, now you reminded me of a plot of Dr. Octopus in a Spider-Man comic where he develops a cure for drug addiction and basically holds the world's drug dealers hostage and says, I will nullify my cure for drug addiction if you pay me a shitload of money.
What like a multifaceted villain that is.
It's amazing. Oh, that's it's astonishing.
Somebody in the Discord, like GX, has been just going through the Marvel backlog and was commenting on there's an extended period of time where Dr. Octopus pretends to be Spider-Man because he thinks Peter Parker's kind of shit at it and he wants to prove it. And so he just acts like a hero to prove a point. Genius. Big brain genius. So, you already have Nintendo's new. Mr. Nintendo has already given you your next Nintendo system. You'll find out in about 6 months when the symptoms begin. By that, I mean lots of kazoos.
Yeah, I think the next console is going to be more of a kind of an iteration on this one. I think it's going to be called the Nintendo Drift, and everything that you do pulls to the right.
Son of a bitch.
Didn't that already come out, though?
Yeah, which number in the Fast and the Furious series is Kyoto Drift?
Two. Okay. Fuck!
I guess it'd be 3.5.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. It's a short in between 3 and 4.
Justice for Han?
I see what you're doing there. I don't want to turn this into Fast and Furious discussion.
So I watched that recently, and that's the least convincing teenager played by a 30-year-old that I've ever seen.
I was going to say a 30-year-old,
you see him,
right?
Shirtless at some point. It's like, that's not a teenager. Like, what the fuck? What are you doing?
Yep.
Are we going to have a second, like, Home Improvement actor reference here? We need to move. All right, who else has their console?
No, I'm pretty satisfied with my Nigma Tech concept. It begins with N, it's fine.
There you go. The other option I had is a wearable device, which of course we know they're working on non-wearables. which was a very weird thing. Most technology doesn't feel like it needs to describe itself as non-wearable. But this is Nintendo Wearable, Nintendo Wear, as they call it. But it's WHERE because it's tracking you in real time. It's an AR experience. And unfortunately, though, it's tracking you so that they might serve you Nintendo themed ads now that they've signed the Mario license over to hundreds of thousands of things. So, if you are looking for new tires, for example, you will see instead of the, Michelin horrifying goop monster, you will be greeted by Mario covered in tires offering you great ride as you see an image of him and Mario Kart doing a drift because these tires are so good they'll grip the corners with no sparks. It's all about the money, gentlemen. All my console suggestions are horrible business ideas. I am broken. All right. Do you want to move on to the next email?
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. I believe that would be you, John.
All right. MASB, right?
Yep.
All right. MASB writes, Dear RFN middle managers, I posit this scenario. Chem Health Pharmaceuticals has fizzled out. The CEO, like any good NFL player, is looking for some fall guys and shows the brain trust of J&J. James and John are currently under house arrest. They're looking for a way to foreign lands, preferably those without extradition treaties. Of course. Preferably. I mean, like, there's an option. How do they get out? Being smuggled out through musical instrument boxes has happened before, so authorities are probably on the lookout for unusually large and heavy DJ Hero boxes. And what country would welcome J&J to begin their empire anew? Finally, what would Greg and Guy do to help their beleaguered and totally innocent buddies? Your friend in free markets, MASB.
I like the MASB. I didn't include this in there. Notes that he's doing this in honor of the start of the Tokyo Olympics.
Nice.
Which, if you're not familiar with what he's referencing, just Google Carlos Ghosn. It's unbelievable.
How do you spell that?
Last name is G-H-O-S-N.
Okay.
It sure is a thing. So I think if we're going down, we got to go to a country that has relatively lax business laws that's going to look at whatever we've done as out of the J&J establishment, independent of what ChemHealth has largely been up to. Because we obviously don't have permission.
It has to be an Eastern Bloc country, James.
No. I don't have that kind of bribe money.
Malaysia, maybe?
Guillaume, what were you going to ask?
Is Shadaloo a real place?
Shadaloo.
I feel like what you need can only be found in the the classic movie.
You're telling me, that John doesn't have a briefcase full of boys and dollars.
What do you think's in the cat helmet, Greg?
Oh God, I need a place that is somewhat out of step with the rest of their neighbors on financial laws. That is making good money on being out of step with their neighbors on financial laws. That is currently engaged in politics to maintain their status as out of step with business and financial laws.
I think I know where
laws.
This is going.
Where is this going, Greg?
Ireland.
Damn right it's going to Ireland.
Yeah.
Land of some of my people. Fuck you, EU. We don't want to have taxes. So I think all I have to do is tell them I'm setting up I'm moving J&J Dream Factory to Ireland on them trying to delay my extradition as long as possible.
Yeah, just rebrand it as a tech company. That's
exactly.
The big news. That's like, yeah, the pharmaceuticals is over now.
We're into tech. No matter what happens, you'll never get persecuted as a monopoly. I mean, you're guaranteed that, so.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Taxes, we have to pay these here.
That's right.
No, all of our sales happened in Ireland. All $6 billion happened.
Voracious consumers of everything.
100% of our sales were to the fine Irish people.
Yeah, we definitely have to get on board with some sort of breakaway republic, regardless of what happens. Regardless of where that is,
Ireland as a breakaway republic is probably really offensive to somebody.
If you really are that out of options, then maybe is Asteroid M real? Did Magneto actually hoist a chunk of the Earth into orbit and make his own paradise there? And does he have a laissez-faire attitude towards economic policy? I don't know. I mean, we kind of know, some of his ideas about social policy, but I don't know whether we ever got that far into it with him.
I don't think for a second he's going to get involved in shovel ready economic policy of we just need somebody to dig a hole.
Asteroid M is a pretty big infrastructure project. It's not.
It is.
It's not just digging holes and filling it in again. I mean, that is, you have to have essentially a sort of space station / continent or something. You've got to launch it. It's got to work. That is a lot of work. I don't care. How handy his magnetic powers are. That's a lot of administration at the very least.
Yeah, I would say at a minimum, then he would be willing to spend, but he's probably not willing to spend frivolously. So
there's a lot of other deserving, projects. But you want to talk about tough to extradite? I mean, you're off the planet,
That's true.
That is a very real barrier.
But there is the possibility that kangaroo courts might be involved there, and I'd just get executed on the spot.
That's true, but yeah, I guess that's where, I don't know, is there a Magneto dollar that's akin to the Bison dollar that you...
sucks the ink right off the dollar.
Would it be metal as well? Like, would he be vain enough to use metal currency? I don't know.
Absolutely he would. He'd kill you with your own money. I oh God, just thinking about the plastic jail and that X-Men movie. God. Now I'm just having a bad feeling. A space station would be a good place to... So I just need to get on one of these now privately operated trips to the International Space Station and refuse to leave. What are they going to do? Do you think an astronaut's going to throw me in a shuttle and make me go back?
Is it going to be the sort of in-orbit equivalent of Assange at the embassy?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking. Like, you can make me leave? No, you can't.
And the last straw is going to be he doesn't clean up after his cat or whatever. Is that what ultimately is going to get you a job done in? put on a shuttle back to Earth to answer for your crimes.
Or someone else's crime. But it's going to cost them billions of dollars to send us back, too. So there's a point of like...
Really going to have to be upset with you the way you always overtake your supplies from the fridge or whatever. But they'll draw a line somewhere.
Right. Like, not only would the people who want us on Earth back have to be really upset because they're going to have to send a rocket with nobody on it to come get us, then we'd have to really upset our counterparts to actually use physical force to try to put us on the thing at risk we would damage stuff on the way out. Like, so we'd have to be really bad guests and also, like, really, really desirable criminals. And I don't think we meet that criteria. Like, space has no extradition policy. Space doesn't care. Space is just darkness. And it's darkness extradites no man.
Yep.
That is going to be the landmark that everyone's looking forward to, is the first, you know, corporation to establish itself in space for tax purposes.
Oh man, Amazon. So you know,
it's like, well, no, all our sales are to the people of the moon, honest.
Nobody lives here. Yes.
Forget Ireland. That's what it's really.
Oh, I would laugh so hard if somebody established themselves.
Someone's going to try it eventually.
There's an Amazon space station that's just one guy.
Yep.
He's up there for a 6-month tour.
And he's an accountant.
His job is to fill the paperwork in every week. Exactly.
Can't pay taxes to the government if there's no government.
That's right. This is, don't tread on me. You can't with no, in zero G.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see Amazon moving their headquarters to the moon. Absolutely. Where would they pay taxes? Where's their headquarters located? It's not located on Earth.
Maybe everyone on Earth will be like Truman in The Truman Show, and Bezos is Ed Harris, who lives inside the moon and orchestrates all our lives for us.
Oh. I feel like there's probably I'm going to say Mesopotamian mythology that basically has that as its god state. Oh dear, we may have created something dark. All right, so how are they going to come get us from our space station? What's their grand scheme to get us there?
A missile?
Well, it's a rocket.
Yeah,
well,
maybe it may be cheaper to just evacuate everyone else and blow you up.
that's my thinking.
Yep.
Missiles go the other way. They come back down. That's the defining feature between the two.
Maybe it might be like a new revolutionary space weapon. It's like, well, we need to test it on something. And, you know, it's like, well, there are those two dickheads that have been evading tax or whatever. So let's just blow them up.
Literally choose the nuclear option.
It's going to be like those pirate radio stations that set up on old British gun platforms out in the North Sea. Like, to evade BBC regulations.
We have to nuke them in orbit. That's the only way to be sure.
It's just us. Yeah. Look, if you try to tax me, I'm just going to crash the colony on you. I've seen anime. I know how it works. Fuck off. How much money did y'all make selling copies of your injectable video game system? I can't talk about it because you're not my government, fucko. God. How do we get up there? And the answer is probably just tell Elon Musk. I bet you can't smuggle two people up into space. I bet you can't do it because you're not smart enough. Then you're basically going to get up there free.
Yeah, probably.
Just, I don't know. I feel like that's the easiest part. You just lock yourself into the trunk of whatever the next car that is sent into space is.
Yeah, but I don't know where I'm going to end up.
Yeah, the only problem is the soundtrack is not David Bowie. It's Yoshi's New Island.
God damn it! God. Siren music this week. Anyone else have grand escape plans? Are we now headed to Ireland / the moon?
So it's one or the other. There's no in between. Well, see, what is the? I guess yeah, probably is that is the moon or whatever. That is the closest we'll have to like going beyond the wall, which I feel is probably where you should go. If this were Westeros,
I'm going to continue to run my business opportunities among the undead. They'd appreciate a strong business plan. Things would have been fine beyond the wall if we had reinvested in the people who live there. That's all I'm saying.
We don't reinvest in people, James. We're J&J, goddammit.
Reinvest in myself.
All that money's going right into us.
That's no short-term investment, is it? You got to get those quick returns. You don't get that with people.
Look, remember, there's two books. There's the book about what we tell people, and then there's the book about what we do. There's no way the undead have auditors. I'm just saying, it's not high on their priority list. They're not going to find the second book. It's fine. Can they even read? But who cares? We're good. Everything's fine. There probably was somebody at Enron who once said, can they even read? Who cares? Three books, four books, fuck it. It's fine. I just want to dare Elon Musk to shoot someone into space for the purposes of evading financial crimes. Just double dog dare. No, you're too chicken to do it. You're too chicken to challenge the IRS by shooting someone into space. Coward. They'd be on the space station in a week. Well, on that, gentlemen, I think it's time for us to wrap this show up. Anybody got anything else they want to talk about? All right.
That's a resounding no.
That's what I say. Dead silence tells me the answer is proceed. Proceed to telling you where to email us like these people had that to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. That's rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. As always, we appreciate your email and ask you to continue to send us your questions, comments, or thoughts. And, as we mentioned earlier, recommendations for retroactive games from 2009. We are not limiting the conversation to games that were on Nintendo systems in 2009, but they could be games that came to Nintendo systems that originally released in 2009 at a later date, as well as some flexibility around regional release dates. But if you're going to be flexible with something, explain your reasoning. And on that, it's time for us to wrap the show up. Greg, what is our music to conclude this week?
Yeah, interesting choice this week. Xander from the NWR staff emailed with a particular request. So I'll read it out here. The 1971 film Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory just turned 50 this year. It's a favorite of many, myself included. I was given the GameCube license game based on the Tim Burton version as a kid, and I loved it. It is a terrible video game. You can tell the entire budget went into the composer's wallet, who is Winifred Phillips. She has composed for titles such as God of War, Assassin's Creed 3, Borderlands, and most notably the Little Big Planet series. She led a very whimsical supplement to the ear when playing the game, which I quite enjoyed growing up. It's a very zany sounding score, as you would expect from a 3D platformer based on a Tim Burton movie. The song I picked is Squirrel Battle, where Charlie goes to war with the squirrels and Oompa Loompas. What better way to honour the pure imaginative legacy of Gene Wilder and that original film? Well, so there you go. It's it is, you know, not sort of unpleasantly whimsical. It's not like too grated or whatever, but it is very much, as you're about to hear, very much what you'd expect given that leader. But this is another case of some minor connection to what's going on the NWR Twitch stream, because I think Xander streamed this like yesterday.
He sure did.
So, yeah, GameCube licensed games. Again, they weren't necessarily all bad, but there were some really poor ones. Wasn't there like a Batman Begins game that would have been around this time that was meant to be awful as well?
No. And,
yeah.
Yeah, I think there was.
It was kind of the last throes of the obligatory movie tie-in. Yeah, obviously a checkered past, you know, at the best of times, but some really, really poor examples, but apparently with some fun soundtracks, though.
There you go.
Some good could come of these things.
Yes, I saw Xander was streaming this on the NWR Twitch and went, oh no, no, I can't encourage this. I can't support this. So, yeah, you can make sure to check out the Nintendo World Report Twitch. They actually have almost a daily schedule now. Twitch.tv/Nintendo World Report. No spaces, no underscores, just all one word. But on that, it is time for us to go. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Later.
Bye-bye.